and welcome to Enabling Commons, a podcast at the McGill Center for Human Rights and Legal Pluralism. Enabling Commons is a space for dialogue among persons with disabilities and their allies to explore strategies that will transform our environments, our commons, to be meaningfully enabling for all. Hello, my name is Ellen Spanigal and this is Enabling Commons. Today we are lucky to have two guests, Mary Kyo and Gordon Rattray. So Dr. Mary Kyo is the Advocacy Director for CBM Global, where she's responsible for leading their advocacy strategy and partners with disability organizations all over the world. And Gordon Rattray is with the International Cooperation Officer, is the International Cooperation Officer at European Disability Forum, and has done lots of work on disability-inclusive disaster risk reduction. So Mary and Gordon, I just want to thank you for taking the time to be here with me today and to tell me a little bit about your work and some of the things you've learned in doing all of this work.
Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you, Ellen.
So before I start asking you some more specific questions, I was just wondering if you could tell me a little bit about yourselves and what you do. And so Gordon, why don't we just start with you?
Okay, so... Yeah, as you said, Ellen, I work for European Disability Forum. I'm originally from the UK, from Scotland, and I've been living in Belgium for the last almost 20 years now. European Disability Forum represents the rights of persons with disabilities in Europe. We're an umbrella organisation of organisations of persons with disabilities in Europe, DPOs or OPDs. And we are a DPO, an organisation of persons with disabilities ourselves. And I'm part of the, also as you said, the international cooperation team. So I'm more involved with things like what the EU does outside of Europe in international cooperation, in making sure that all of this work is inclusive of people with disabilities in the countries where the work is being done. And I've been with EDF for about a year and a half now, and prior to that I was working in more in humanitarian action and development, all with the lens of disability inclusion.
And Mary, I know I already introduced you, but I'm wondering if you could just share a little bit about yourself as well.
Yeah, sure. My name is Mary Kyo. I'm based in Dublin, Ireland, so I'll try to speak slow. I generally speak quite fast. I'm a wheelchair user living in the suburbs of Dublin. I work with an organisation called CBM Global Disability Inclusion. We work alongside persons with disabilities in over 20 countries in the world. We're a new organisation. We came from CBM Federation, and we're now, a startup organisation, and really bringing with us the experience we've had from before, but also looking into new areas around kind of, and climate is a key part of that. The key principles that we work with is around partnership with organisations of persons with disabilities. So that's why we're glad we're here with Gordon today, because EDF is somebody that we work quite closely with, somebody. And my role in CBM Global is advocacy director. So it's working along with the Federation members for and our partners on disability advocacy. And that's, you know, that ranges from data advocacy to climate work to inclusive health. There's a broad range of areas that we support advocacy with. So yeah, so really glad to be here today.
Well, thank you both for introducing yourselves. Part of the reason why we have both of you together today talking, which is a little bit unusual, is because I wanted to ask you about a video that you both had the opportunity to work on. And just to give a little bit of background for people who are accessing the podcast conversation, the 14th session of the Conference of States Parties happened last week, and this is the conference on the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And during the events, there was a side event on disability inclusive climate action, which is the first time anything like that has happened at Conference of States Parties. And at the side event, they showed a video on the intersection of disability and climate change. And this video talked about the impacts of climate change on people with disabilities, barriers, and then also how we can move forward. So how we can move forward in talking about disability inclusive climate action, working with people who are working in climate action, and also disability justice, bringing people together. So I don't want to take up too much space, because you should just go watch the video, which will be linked with the podcast as well. But Gordon and Mary both had a huge hand in helping make the video and make this happen, and also getting just these conversations about disability inclusive climate justice started. So I wanted to hear about your experience in creating the video. When did this become an idea? How did you start working together on this? So I don't know who would like to answer that one first.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, this came about, I mean, we've been having lots of conversations around climate and disability and the intersection of disability and climate with lots of different organizations of persons with disabilities over the last 2 years. And we did research back in 2019 with our partners and with a group of disability activists around, you know, what are the impacts of climate change? And since then, it's been a journey, you know, internally with us as an organization on this, but also really kind of thinking about how can we get the voices piece or the representation piece. So that was kind of the genesis of the research that we did. And then just in discussion with European Disability Forum, you know, we were talking about, well, would it be interesting to do a video? And Gordon had already actually done a lot of work in terms of the European Development Days, which is actually where it was originally launched. So that was kind of the genesis, Gordon, if I remember, of pulling together this video.
It was, yes. And it all happened actually very quickly. That's probably the most surprising thing about it from my side. So we... European Development Days is an event that happens every year, bringing together organisations involved in development, European-based or international organisations involved in development together in Brussels. And because of the COVID situation, this year it was all online. And we, Mary and I, were speaking a few weeks ago, I guess, working out what would be one of the best ways to bring our the topic of European Development Days this year was about sustainability and the Green Deal and climate change, and we were trying to think of what would be a good way of or an original way of bringing it together, and we thought we would try and develop a video quite quickly, based on the fact that everybody is now so used to using Zoom and other online platforms, because we couldn't travel, we couldn't send a film crew to interview people, but we actually saw it as an opportunity rather than a barrier, because we could now reach people in lots of different countries maybe more easily than we would have done a year or two ago. So yeah, it all happened actually over the space of about 2 months maximum, I guess, from first idea to the final video. And it was just a case of we didn't specifically sit down and write a script and work out what we wanted to hear said. Rather, we kind of put out a call saying who is interested in giving their views on disability and climate change or climate justice, and get in touch with us. And then we interviewed many people and kind of pulled the script out from that. And it's not really a script, it's more just the views and opinions of people based on their own experience, which is really what we wanted at this stage.
Yeah, and maybe just to come in on that, just to say that, you know, when the call was put out, I mean, there are people with disabilities and there are organizations of persons with disabilities working in climate. So this is the only ever first piece that has come out on it. And, you know, that's whether it's in a policy negotiation space or there's, you know, people doing research, and there's also, you know, there's projects happening, you know, in small amounts. I mean, I think, you know, on the video we heard from San Mili in the Pacific Disability Forum, and you know the colleagues from there on the advisory panel of the DCARP program. So there is work happening on disability and climate. I think what we really want to achieve in terms of framing the video was not putting it into a policy speaker, not determining what would come from the video. So as Gordon said, you know, like we did a, you know, to use a research term, a thematic analysis of what came up across all of the interviews. And, you know, the process was going through the scripts. We had Zoom, which we recorded the transcripts, and we were able to print them, save them, and then actually, you know, read through them rather than watch the videos and actually see the words. I think that was really helpful, Gordon. That was a great way to be able to, we could see kind of a story weaving through it. So, of course, we put our own kind of editorial piece on it, but that was kind of how the framing happened of it. So it wasn't with a view in mind to say, well, this needs to be for COP, or this needs to be for the UN, or this needs to be, this just needs to tell people's stories. And that's what we thought was most important about it.
I was just going to say to add on to what you said at the beginning there, Mary, as well as there already being some organisations of persons with disabilities who are doing climate specific work, there are many and other disability organisations who are already working in related fields and have a long experience and a long history and a lot of experience in related fields like disaster risk reduction, DRR, humanitarian action, development work. And a lot of the time there are such big overlaps there with what's required for effective climate action that for them it's maybe just a case of tweaking what they're doing or recognizing that what they're doing is actually very related to climate activity and either has to be increased or slightly tweaked or just identified as that. So there's a lot of already existing skills and resources and experience out there that's completely applicable to the climate conversation. It's just a case of maybe making people aware of it on both sides of the discussion.
I'm wondering if, like, just in terms of having everyone like share their experiences, was it really hard like cutting it down? Like, were there a lot more people who had more things to say, and it just was impossible to get it down to the 18 minutes, right? For the long video.
Gordon, like Gordon will tell you, I mean, just briefly, we had it, I mean, I can't, I don't know the amount of footage, but it was half our videos per individual, and Gordon did the majority of those interviews, and then it was the transcripts with that. So I think it was we got it down to, we had a shorter 4 minute one and a 17 minute one, I think. But I think originally, Gordon, what was the original cut? And even at that, we were so concerned about cutting out people, you know, and editing it down just from our perspective. So that was, I think we quite ethical discussions around that, or back and forward on it, Gordon.
I think our first cut was in the region of 30 minutes. When you look more closely, you realize that often people are saying similar things. So it's a case of pulling out the one that's more, that's easier to grasp or is said more succinctly rather than the other one, maybe in some cases. But really, there is no shortage of people who have got things to say about this. And in fact, there were so many people. The call for people went out also on social media, and there were many that didn't manage to respond on time, so couldn't get into the video at all, that probably had some things to say on it as well. So there's a huge amount of information and a huge number of people out there who are ready to talk about it, given the opportunity.
That's most of the questions I had about the video, but just because the video is part of your work and, you know, one of your strategies in your work on this intersection, I wanted to hear more about when you started to do work on disability inclusive climate action specifically, and how your approach to that work has changed. Because, you know, as you're saying, like, the video has had a positive impact, and it's something where people are sharing their experiences, it's accessible, it's short, it's easy to watch. What are some mistakes, I guess, that you have made as you started to get into the work of disability inclusive climate justice, and some things you've learned kind of in this process?
Go ahead, Mary.
It's a good question, Ellen. Thanks, Gordon. I can share just internally from our side in CBM Global, you know, when we did the research back in 2019, it was kind of putting, you know, more kind of, well, you know, you're straddling between climate justice, climate adaptation, and all of these terminologies that go with it. But generally, it was around trying to wear, you know, raise awareness of it. There was a lot of work already done on this with former colleagues in CBM that had, you know, led the way on this. Then, you know, CBM, within CBM Global, we adopted an environment policy last year, and then also really started looking at what this means. So now there's a much more awareness level of it. It was always there, but it's kind of brought it to light, and you know, there's a new working group set up now within our organization to actually look at this across our advocacy programs and the advisory work that we do. So I think sometimes when you do things from an advocacy perspective, it can bring change into organizations as well, or it can influence it. So I think, you know, that's what we've kind of seen. You know, the mistakes are, I think we all learn. I mean, I'm a firm believer in learning from mistakes, because I make so many of them. But, you know, I think the piece around how do we position this so that, you know, it's climate adaptation, and it doesn't create a whole parallel of new work to be done, that we really look at how to integrate this into, you know, the DNA of our organizations, you know, because I think many mistakes that have been made in the past with anything that has a thematic aspect to it, like gender or disability, is always nearly seen as a parallel or an add-on. So I think the climate piece, we've learned from mistakes in the past, and I think the climate piece is so transformative that it really has to go across everything we do and how we live. So I'm not so sure that answers your question, but I think we can, there's lots of lessons from before about how we bring, you know, a thematic area like this into our work, or an approach, as we call it, rather than thematic. Yeah.
Yeah, and Gordon. I could say from our perspective, I mean, we're already advocating to the EU that their Green Deal is disability inclusive. So things like when they're considering reconstruction of buildings or building things in new ways, to make sure that it's all done accessibly, and you know, having accessible transport systems, and that persons with disabilities and their organizations are involved in the planning of all these things from the very beginning. So, like, again, like I was saying earlier, you know, for in some ways it's a case of applying the techniques that we've used in the past to this new concept. So focusing on participation of people with disabilities and things like accessibility and inclusion, and remembering that people with disabilities are often the people who are living more in poverty, so are going to be more impacted by some of the climate mitigation things that may result in price increases, that kind of thing. And maybe one of the learnings that certainly I personally have had quite recently, I wouldn't say this is an organizational thing, but personally I've kind of realized that we should be more and more stressing that we are allies of the climate movement, and not give the perception that we are somehow against the things that are happening. You know, the debate about plastic straws, but there are solutions for these things, and we are here to provide the solutions, because, you know, we've got the experience of overcoming these problems in other fields. So we need to make sure that the climate movement doesn't see the disability movement as someone who's just, or an organization or a movement that's just creating problems for them. It's quite the opposite. We're an ally there to make sure that they find solutions that work for everyone.
So in that vein, like, what have you learned about bridging together organizations that are primarily focused on climate and sustainability, and then organizations working for people with disabilities who, you know, are often working in silos? And like you're saying, like, the interests of one or the other are sometimes harmfully pitted against the other in, like, the media and things like that. So what have you learned about trying to have those organizations working towards the same goal and partnering together?
I can certainly speak about things in the past where we've made collaborations work in fields like disaster risk reduction and humanitarian action, accessibility. When you get people to understand the benefits of disability inclusion, and for some people that's really easy, like for web developers, when they make the click that accessible websites are more, they work better and they are better for many more people than persons with disabilities, when they make that click, the game's over, it's easy, they've got the message. And we've had this experience with other things in other fields like DRR and humanitarian and development things. And I think it's going to happen with the climate discussion as well. We're maybe just at early stages at the moment.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you know, as Gordon said, there's been quite a lot of collective action before. And I just think back in terms of, you know, we as an INGO, you know, the alliances that we work through, like, for example, the International Disability and Development Consortium, the IDDC, you know, really, when we look at how the SDGs came about in Agenda 2030, that whole collective action then in partnership with the disability movement is really, really critical. So, you know, then it's looking at, so we do have the experience of collective action. I think there's probably dialogues that are needed around some of these points, like that Gordon spoke to about, the straws conversation or those kind of flashpoints that have come up, to have that kind of, you know, general understanding. But I think, you know, all of what the climate justice movement speak to is all what the disability movement creates through in terms of equality and redistribution and just and fair world. I don't think any of us are, you know, in any disagreement with that. So I think they're the bridge pieces for how to start working together even more closely, and how, you know, we can bring that collective knowledge into that space as well. So I think movements are never easy, like, as in, and I don't mean like any particular movement, but movements in general, collective action takes time and takes trust to build up. But, you know, we've seen it being so successful in the past before. So I think we'll continue to see that.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. In terms of, like, I know the video that you produced together was about building awareness and, again, just letting the experience of people with disabilities really just speak, like, let people with disabilities speak for themselves about their knowledge on climate action. But I'm wondering what both of your separate organizations, but also, like, together as partners and your collaboration, what your priorities, and you kind of elaborated on this a little bit already, Gordon, but, like, what specific priorities for disability inclusive climate action will be, and some of the things, like, I guess, like, putting into action some of the things we heard from people in the video on a way forward for disability inclusive climate action. Like, what are some next steps that your organizations and you both together will be working towards?
Yeah, as you said, I touched on a few earlier. So, you know, things like when identifying and investing in green jobs, make sure that people with disabilities are included in, are able to get those jobs, are included in that new workplace, marketplace. When developing new infrastructure, whether it's building infrastructure or telecommunications infrastructure that's more climate neutral or climate friendly, make sure that it's also fully accessible. It's always financially, economically good value in the long term. It may be seen as a cost in the beginning, but it shouldn't be seen as a cost. It should be seen as an investment, because long term it's better for everyone. Things like transport, as I said, making sure it's all fully accessible, and making sure that any extra costs that do result as climate action are not going to impact people with disabilities disproportionately. And one of the keys to all that, again, as I said earlier, is having people with disabilities involved from the very beginning in all the discussions and decision making. I mean, these are legal obligations anyway for governments. It's not something that's just a nice thing to do. It's actually an obligation, and it's beneficial, and it's going to mean the result is better for everyone.
Yeah. I think as an INGO, I think there's actions that we can take which are, you know, around kind of supporting capacity building around climate and disability. I think that came out through the video. You know, I mean, in the past, the whole climate discussion has been very technical and scientific, and now we've this whole growth around, you know, social justice, linking climate and social justice together. So, you know, some kind of, and we're going to be working on a toolkit. That's the next thing now in the coming weeks, around trying to distill down, you know, what are the key things to know, you know, in terms of policy? What are the key things to know in terms of trying to influence at national level or at global level, like in terms of COP? And I think one of the points that struck me from the video was, I think, was from Jason, who basically said, you know, the need for leadership. So I think, you know, kind of INGOs working to support OPDs develop leadership and, you know, create that kind of, you know, co-production space around this is really critical, because as Gordon says, it's the voices of persons with disabilities and people with disabilities who need to be part of the solution of change for climate. So and that's a really critical role of OPDs to do. Yeah.
And picking up on that, what that requires is because OPDs, organizations of persons with disabilities, are already full time busy doing things, whether it's whatever it is to do with advocacy towards other parts of life. So what this requires is financial commitment and support, as well as materials and information and education in capacity building of DPOs, OPDs. It's also sustainable financial commitment towards building their internal human resources and governance structures so that they can continue to engage. You know, when there are projects for maybe 1 or 2 years that involve a DPO, an OPD, that funding needs to make sure that that organization of persons with disabilities can continue after the project has finished to engage at the same level in that topic. Otherwise, the money is short term and hasn't been useful.
Yeah, all about sustainability.
Exactly.
And I think the research piece as well is really critical. And I think research that's led by persons with disabilities, researchers with disabilities, is really, really important too. So I think, you know, really more encouraging programs like that, and all of those programs that are now popping up, I'm seeing them in universities everywhere, MA in climate justice, MA, you know, masters of this. And, you know, I think that's the type of thing research needs to also getting disability inclusion into those curriculums, so that it's considered as much as gender would be, and as much as, you know, working with people who are living in poverty. So I think those intersecting areas are really important also.
And thinking of very simple practical solutions, you know, for organizations working in the so-called mainstream part of climate action, inclusive employment, you know, employ people with disabilities in your organization. That's how you learn about disability inclusion internally. And once you start doing it internally, then it's automatically going to be externally more inclusive. You know, it's a lot of the times it's these things are not that complicated when you start looking at solutions.
So the last question I had was a personal one. And I just wanted to ask you, I guess, what has been something important that you have learned in this process of creating the video and then also doing work on disability inclusive climate action? So something that you have learned from either other experts and activists, or just a line of thought of yours that maybe has changed or has become more important, you just have been thinking about more and more frequently, just something to leave me with that you have learned personally in this process.
I'm thinking
for me it's probably it's probably a bit of a vague answer, but for me it's a genuine interest in the topic itself, an increased genuine interest in the topic itself. It's like some things that you learn more about, you lose less interest in, but with this one, the more I learn about it, the more I'm interested in it, and that's a good thing for sure for the fact that I'm probably going to be working in it more and more. But yeah, more and more genuinely interested in it, the more I know about it. And the old cliche goes as well, very true, the more you know about it, the more you realise you don't know about it. So there's lots to learn.
I think for me, what I learned was, I think the pulling together videos like this or any type of communications is really, you know, there's an ethical piece that goes with it around co-production and getting agreement. And, you know, we went through that whole process. I mean, obviously, you know, getting consent forms and that. So, you know, in the production level, that's what struck me around that in terms of learning, that that's always kind of, you always have to think of, you know, we lots of technical things as well that we needed to think about that came up during the video. To make it as fully inclusive as possible. And then just personally around climate, I mean, I think, you know, the more you read about it, the more you realize that this really is around transforming how we live our lives. It really is, because if we don't really start to think about the impact that we have as individuals, and even while it might be small, it's still an impact, and the choices that we can make in our lives to try and be less, have less impact, I think is really important. So to me, you know, that's a critical thing. And also the trying to make it less technical and more about how we want to live our lives and the movement we feel about human rights and equality is something as well. I think that's always learning for us all the time. Yeah.
Thank you both for answering the question. That was it. That was all the questions I had. But again, like, I just wanted to say, if there was something that you felt was missing from the conversation or a question that I should have asked, please, like, now is the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could, you know, you could ask, like, for listeners, you know, in terms of your own, you know, particularly if there are kind of persons with disabilities listening or people from kind of social movements, and you're engaged with government on this, is ask the question, where is disability in the climate policy or in the, I think that's a critical piece. Even just that starting point is really important to do, would be maybe just one follow up. Yeah.
Oh, that's hugely helpful, Gordon. Is there anything you would like to say?
Not really. I guess I was thinking that it's probably pretty clear from the video, as we said at the beginning as well, that it's very much about personal perspectives, and we don't mention during the video any of the legal obligations that we touched on earlier in the conversation. So it's really, whenever anyone's watching the video or using the video or planning to use the video in any of their work, remember that it's not just, these are not just personal opinions of people. You know, these things are grounded in legal documents, and governments are legally obliged to include people with disabilities, and those documents, those frameworks and laws exist. So, and maybe in the future we'll do something else, we'll add something onto this video, maybe make it more appropriate for different contexts, I don't know. But everything that's said in the video is underpinned by legal documents, the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. It's all in there, and it all holds the duty bearers to account, so it's not just nice thoughts from nice people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I wanted to thank you both for taking the time to answer all my questions and to talk about the process of creating the video. And for those of you listening to the podcast, remember that the video that Gordon and Mary helped produce, Disability Inclusive Climate Justice, is linked to this podcast episode, and be sure to check it out. Thank you for listening to Enabling Commons. Stay tuned for our next episode, and take care.